This episode contains potentially triggering content related to drug use, overdose, suicidal ideology, and depression. Viewer discretion is advised. If you or a loved one is having suicidal thoughts, please seek help by calling 1-800-273-8255 or by visiting suicidepreventionlifeline.org. If you or a loved one is experiencing addiction or substance abuse, please call 1-800-662-4357 or go online to samhsa.gov. The Collaboration Conversation is brought to you by Project Brickworks, the new ministry dedicated to equipping Christians to use their gifts and talents to bring others into a relationship with King Jesus. Project Brickworks is a crowdfunded nonprofit ministry made possible by amazing, generous folks like you, and we are so very grateful. We created the Collaboration Conversation as a way for Christians to share about their upcoming projects and how they are using the gifts and talents that God has given them. Today, we have a very special guest, Ms. Cindy Blum. Cindy is a professional addiction, grief, and recovery coach. Our families have been friends for a very long time, at 20-ish yeah. or so years. Yeah. And we are so grateful that you're going to spend some time with us today. It's good to see you.
Good to see you guys.
How long has it been since you've seen Sarah? Has it been that a while?
You mean outside of social media? I mean, I feel like I see her
yesterday.
That's true. Yes. Okay.
This is the new see her.
That's
true.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Since
maybe high school.
But I did have somebody drop off the Sway DVD, and I was able to watch the whole thing.
It was so fun. But I remember going over to your house all the time. At least in high school, early high school.
Yeah, I was thinking we did, we carpooled a couple of years to VBS and some stuff with our kids.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Well, and
together for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you and I got to meet at a church that we both worked at and found out that we lived in the same city a couple miles from each other. And we just have really kept in contact over all these years. It's crazy to think it's really been more than 20 years.
It would have been 97,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
That's when we moved here.
Yeah, that's
you were probably her first friend.
Oh, no, she was.
Yes, I believe it. That's what I'm saying. We moved here in 97, so.
And you might be my only friend left from that church, but that's all right. That's a story for another
it
day.
It happens.
No, that's not true. I do have other friends. I was just joking. All right, well, so for our listeners who might not know you, if you wouldn't mind, just tell us a little bit about you and what you do for a living and your family.
My name is Cindy Blum, and like Sarah said, I'm an addiction and recovery coach. Prior to that, I worked at a large church in Franklin and spent 25 plus years doing congregational care. So moving into the whole coaching thing was fairly easy. So I married my high school sweetheart, and his name is Dan, and he started his own business in 1995. But we moved here from Minnesota in 91, and we're living outside of Nashville, and we have our own business, Blum Guitars. And he's been doing that since 95. And just since 2018, we were doing that together. And yes, everyone goes, you work for your husband. I go, no, I'm the owner and he works for me.
There you go.
I just like, you know, so some days I kind of go, no, I want a different role.
That's funny.
So we tease about that. And we had two children, Eric. I just sat here and I thought, oh, how old is he? He was born in 84. So tell me how old Bo was.
I would say 35.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on when his birthday is.
Yeah.
So November.
Okay. Yeah. 35.
Yeah. And then Chloe's is 33. And so anyway, we've got two kids and I have a son-in-law and some grandcats. And that's kind of what we're all about.
That's awesome. So you made a good point. I hadn't thought of this, but our oldest sons were the same age, went to high school together. And if you do check out Bo's Facebook page, it's a picture. His Facebook
profile
picture is
cover.
The cover. Is he and Eric together? Part of the reason that we're having you on, not only are you a very talented and gifted person, but you have a very unique story, and it kind of has a lot to do with where you're at right now. You're in Eric's mm-hmm. cabin, and if you wouldn't mind, just share with us your journey, and include, you know, if you can think about it, Eric's story, and again, we know that you're going to talk about this artwork, but all of this artwork behind you that he created.
So Eric graduated from high school and went to MTSU and graduated with a degree in, basically printmaking, illustration, graphic design, sculpture, and web design. So five different, majored in graphic design. And we lost him on May 1, 2014. And we lost him to a traumatic mental health event that led to a relapse, and he died of an accidental heroin overdose. So that day, you know, we had a lot of family that knew that he struggled with depression and anxiety, and that he knew that those two things drove him to use substance and have a substance use disorder. But they didn't know how dark some of the days had gotten. Well, that morning, a friend of mine that I worked with at Christ Community, she took me by the face. She goes, how are you going to tell this story? And I was like, I opened my phone and looked at Facebook, and Chloe had posted just an hour before that, worst day of my life. I just lost my best friend and brother to an accidental heroin overdose. Turned the phone around and I said, I guess we're telling the truth. And, people go, oh, that's so tragic that you were forced into that. And I go, you don't really get it. She saved me by that post. Saved me. Because I would have made stuff up. I would have tilted stuff. I would have softened it. I would have taken the edge off. I would have not had it. Because I am this kind of person that doesn't want anyone to feel uncomfortable, especially because of something I'm bringing to the table. Well, we started a journey where people got really uncomfortable. But I hope that what we started was a conversation. And so that's a little bit about the history behind what's the driving force. It wasn't as much Eric's death as his life that we have continued on. We do a lot of stuff. We're not saving the world in any way, and we'll kind of get into that later. But we're motivated by a lot of the distress and the pain that we experienced as we were carrying out, just living out our story. And I just said, you know what, this isn't our story. This is God's story. And, there's enough things that were dark in that season. And I just said, it's taken enough from us. It doesn't get to take anymore.
Yeah.
So back to the joke of working for my husband, when we have bad days and we're working together, I go, it doesn't get to take anymore. Let's just remember that. And there's a part of it's kind of like, you know, when you're in the middle of the ocean and things are going crazy and you're going, you know what, I can anchor here and my anchor will go deep enough. And there's a point in that we just get to recalibrate and remember that there's, you know, there's worst days. You know, 2020, I say 2020 kind of leveled the playing field, because the whole world now knows about powerlessness, knows about discomfort, knows about the grief of every day and the uncertainty and having no control. And I'm like, damn, that's kind of what like fighting this illness with Eric felt like, you know. It felt like that every day. So that's a little bit of a background.
Yeah. Oh, no, totally. So you guys have been pretty vocal. Vocal is not the right word, but anytime anybody asks
you're very transparent.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But you guys have also done a lot of projects and things like that. Anytime anyone does a story, it's like they call you. I mean, is that pretty accurate?
Yeah. One of the guys from the news channels, I was called, interviewed, called again when Mayor Megan Berry's son died, called and got on the interview route. I got called again. And this is So here comes the dark humor warning. I go, am I the only one in the Rolodex under mom of a dead kid? Seriously,
oh,
guys.
Oh, my gosh.
There
yeah.
are way more people.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, but you know, if, I mean, you may want to cut this. But yeah, but you know, they, you know your story. You know how to tell it. And we trust it. So,
yes.
I mean, that's part of the hard part is we have never gone to seek out ways to share our pain or our joy. I mean, because we do have both. It does hold both. But so there's something in that, that I go, you know what? I wake up in the morning and since, you know, it'll be 7 years, May 1. And I remember early on waking up and thinking, I can't do this. How do you, I mean, Eric was sober and clean for 6 months. We were having the best hope that we'd ever had. And it was one day of a tragic event and a mental health crisis that turned it around and we lost him. And yeah. I was like, you know what, God, I can't do this. This is way above my pay grade.
Yeah.
So every morning I woke up and I said, oh, dear Father in heaven. Sometimes I went, oh, dude, you have some heavy duty grief work to do.
Yeah.
Because this isn't my story. This is yours. Redeem it. Do whatever you need to do. But please make me obedient because I don't want to do this.
Right. Yeah.
So when we share, I tell Dan, I go, if this is the last time I ever have to say this, I'm good. You too? And he goes, yeah, I'm good. But if we're asked, we try to be considerate. And because I just want people to have the courage to have someone have gone before them to share.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
we
I think-
also say, like I said, we're not saving the world by what we do and by what stories we share. But I share it in hopes that people can borrow our story until they can tell their own. Because sometimes it's not yours to tell until you've lost your loved one. You know, before Eric died, it was really his to tell.
Yeah.
After he died, it became our story of grief and loss. So in a lot of ways, there's a lot of people that are going through a lot of stuff. And I'm like, you know what? You can point over to those crazy folks. Hey, look at that thing on Facebook, you know, and try to say, this is, you know, please look at this. And I think people do borrow our story.
Yeah.
Because they can't tell their story.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you mentioned this earlier to speak on that. You talked about how uncomfortable it can be and how, before all of this, you talked about how you never wanted to make anybody feel uncomfortable with what you brought to the table. But I think that you, embracing this has led to a probably more positive what was the word I just used? Uncomfortable and uncomfortable conversations with other families who have gone through this that you probably could ever know. I think that is happening because you have embraced that and you are having these really uncomfortable conversations that need to be had and talked about. There are people who need to hear it. And so I just wanted to commend your obedience your bravery and courage to embrace the uncomfortable.
Oh, totally.
When I was working on church staff as the director of congregational care, I would literally tell everyone, I am your missionary back to the church because you guys are missing it. You don't know how to have these conversations. You think it's black and white. So I did a training and it was with some of the, some of the leadership. And I said, I want to do a case study. I want to throw a situation out and let's troubleshoot it. And they're like, okay. I said, so bring one to the table. What do you, and they didn't have anything. I said, okay, how about ours?
Wow.
Let me put my story out on the table. You guys pick it apart. And they were like, you would do that? And I go, why not? I'm sitting right here. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
I know that that's your courage. But I also know that I invested in enough relational equity that I could do that in that group. I also know that, honestly, what they thought of me at the end of the day, if they were judging me based on a story God gave me,
yeah,
that's on them in some ways.
Yeah.
So it was a really good night of of literally being able to take one of the hardest stories in the church. I mean, there's some that are what I call that are act of God, you know. Okay, so we got a tornado, nobody's to blame for that. We got the house fell down on somebody, nobody, there's fire. You know, I would tell one of the pastors, I go, you do the act of God and I'll take the stupid syntax ones, because no. We just gotta, you know, we gotta, I'm better at that. I'm better at people who have really messed up and helping them see God in the middle of that. And wow. In my mind, there's nothing more beautiful than watching God love on people who have made huge mistakes. Mm-hmm. There's no more beautiful. I mean, because I see what he does in my heart and I know what my heart's like. And so it's awesome. It's my favorite group of people to work with. So.
Well, we need to duplicate you and send you into every church. you know what I'm saying? You're having these tough conversations with your church that you've been at for decades, right? But yeah. There's so many other churches missing the boat, and they don't have someone like you to bring light to a tough topic. And so the stigma continues, right? And, that's tough. Well, so I don't know exactly what you would, you know, if you could give me a summary of things, but we love the artwork behind you. We know that's mm-hmm. Eric's. You know, just from knowing him, I knew how talented he was, and that was for sure a God-given gift. But do you have a favorite pieces or stories?
Well, this piece, I'm going to slide out of the way here.
Also, this don't forget to tell us where you are.
I'm in what we called Eric's cabin. He would often live. I mean, he had seasons of homelessness where I would bring sleeping bags. He's like, Mom, I have 7 sleeping bags this van. And I'm like, yep. And when it gets cold, there'll be another 8 coming, you know? So we had moments like that. And then we had moments where he was in a place in his journey where he felt like he could be here and work, and it ended up being more aftercare kind of stuff. But that piece back there, that is, that's one from his senior project. It's on goatskin. So it's a real cool piece that we would love to incorporate that into kind of a guitar wall hanger piece.
Oh, nice.
But that means that Dan and I have to kind of agree, and that's been where we're stuck. We're just like, okay, I'm not sure that one is. This one here, the one that's green with the black and gray, that is actually the very last piece he did.
Oh.
When he was when the morning of April 30, he hadn't slept for, it was probably the second full day of no sleep with this mental health event. And he was covered in that paint, and it was covered all over here. And after he died, it's 6 different panels, and I literally had to match the drip marks going down to try to figure out what it was.
Wow.
So I put them all together, and we call, okay, so perspective, Chloe hates that piece. She's like, why do you have it hanging up? Oh. And I'm like, because it's his last statement of what he's done. And this is kind of my space anyway. So, but we call it Your Mind. Our pastor, Scotty Smith, on the morning of Eric's death would call, and he got a hold of Dan easier than me. And he would call and he'd say, Dan, when Eric was dying in that bathroom with a needle in his arm, Jesus and his angels were reaching down and said, you are mine. You are mine.
Wow. Yes.
So we just call that one.
That's awesome.
And then there's several others that are just kind of prints. There's one back there you probably can't see very well, but it's a real good picture. It's proof. It's before the heroin addiction kicked in.
Yeah.
But he had a real tremendous loss in a relationship, and he never recovered from that.
Oh.
And it's literally an image of him, and his heart is tearing out of his chest and going through his hand. So there's a lot of his pictures that speak to his grief, but then there's a lot that also speak to, you know, some whimsical stuff. There's one up there with a cat, the blue one.
The blue one, yes.
Yes. That's the blue one in the corner.
There it is.
There it is.
That's his cat with a cape on. It's called Super Mitt. So, you know, there's a lot of fun ones. But then you can see his pain, and it's a huge gift to have it. But I during COVID, I mean, actually it was January, probably. I came out here and I tried to go through another cabinet, and I was like, whoa. I know why I stuck it in the thing and put it in the cabinet, because it's very hard. Oh. Very hard, very painful, but depression and anxiety, you know, a mood disorder with a creative mind and grief and trauma involved in all of that. It's hard to look at.
Oh, yeah.
I really feel I want to have enough courage to look at it. He lived through it. I want to have enough courage to look at it. And that's the hard part about mental illness. You know, there's really not much support. I mean, after Eric died, he died in 14. My mom and dad both died within 2 months and 2 days of each other in 2016. Both had hospice. And, you know, people are like, I'm really sad. I'm sorry that it's so hard. And I sat there thinking, this isn't hard. Do you understand what you have when you have hospice? Do you understand what you have when you have doctors and nurses there caring for them? Do you understand what that support looks like? Do you understand what Caring Bridge looks like? Do you understand that you can speak the pain out loud and it has a name that everybody can agree on, that cancer's bad or that this thing is bad? When I talk about what killed my son, there's a whole committee out there that really isn't sure whether he was just lazy or he had made it up or he was just dramatic or he's, you know, and I'm like, you don't get support when, right. You know, so when I was still on church staff, I'd say I'm not stopping until there's Caring Bridge for mental illness and possibly even overdose, until it's okay for someone to start a Caring Bridge for that.
Yeah.
Then I feel like I can maybe go home and sew and stop talking about it.
Yeah.
Well, and I know that's extreme, but it's a little bit of a picture of how different and how shameful we have created mental illness. And that's one thing that we can kind of agree on. But then when you move into that there's substance use disorder involved, we as parents of parents of dead kids, we turn on each other.
No.
It's not even a safe place there, because how they got there is so different and it's so judged. So it's a really painful thing. And I never tell anybody that, oh, come on, this is an easy road. I go, no, this is a hard journey. We've been given it. God goes along with us.
Yeah.
And if you're a believer, let's talk through where God is in all of it. Because that's the important conversation.
Yeah. Well, so this transitions a little bit. You are now a recovery coach. And I'm going to guess that you would not have done that or pursued that certification other than this story. So what do you do now? What does this look like? Your new coaching life?
Under our, so we have a guitar business and we build guitars. And under that, we kind of do this hashtag guitars that care. So what I do is I help resource people and help them find, journeys to go to. I do coach, and do, you know, phone call coaching mostly now during COVID. And actually it's probably better, I think, just because of the role a coach has, it's easier for people to kind of talk on the phone. And I'm not, as a coach, we don't go back and do family of origin traumas. We don't do any of that. We look at decisions that have to be made and how do we recalibrate how we think or assess a situation. And that's pretty much what my job is. I sit with people who are either dealing with grief or addiction. A lot of times it's family members who have an addict. The resources are very slim because all the money usually goes towards the person who's dying of the substance use disorder. And there's not anything left for the family. So the family kind of withers on a vine until sometimes once they've lost their loved one, then they'll get help. But a lot of times they just won't. So So I try to make it, you know, extremely accessible and affordable for people to get help, and mostly just help them think through even how do you put an aftercare plan in place? How do you look at what is needed? How do you stop and pause and say, there are things that we need to decide, and these are next steps. How do you look at that? And it comes easy when you can pause and say, we're not just dealing with a last crisis. We're going to pull it up to 30,000 feet and see how we got here, and then try to look at 2 years of how do you get through it. So,
yeah. Wow. Well, so you're working, but you and Dan are working together. So you're not, are you doing the coaching full time or just as needed?
No. Okay. I would do it full time. I just, like I said, it's a hard culture to break into, because people don't see coaching really as valuable. They go to a therapist or they go to a counselor, but what we do is so different. The roles are just very different.
Okay.
And there gets to be a time where I kind of feel like people stay in therapy, individual therapy, too long, and it would be better for them to move into a more active, therapy. They're really not interacting and telling you this is how you get to point A and point B. And as coaches, we do a little more of that and say, here's some journeys and paths. What would it look like to go down those? And let's make some goals and set those goals.
Good.
I did not know that difference. That's really, really interesting.
Yeah. We start at the present. We're informed by history, but we start at the present and then we look forward and, mostly try to help people to not do 180s and let's go 5 degrees of change gets us into a whole direction. And the courage to just even look at, a lot of times it's just story work, how to look at it, and how to, the first time that you speak it out loud to yourself or speak it to someone else or whatever. So it's based on a lot of recovery principles, which has been real helpful for people in the past.
Good. Well, we were talking, you mentioned earlier about being in charge of the congregational care team at the church, and you've a couple examples here and there. And then of course now with coaching, it just seems like people is a spiritual gift you have. compassion, caring for people, putting in energy towards other people. That's not something that comes naturally to anybody, because we're all, human and very self-oriented. But for you to, in some of these examples, just really show us examples of how you are others driven. So to me, that seems like a gift from God. And so I was wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing with us a little bit about that particular gift, but then also if you have any other gifts and talents that you want to share with us and how you're using them.
Well, I took the spiritual gift thing, and it's mercy and administration. And I'm like, as a coach, you do have to be pretty organized in your thoughts and to be able to stop, because it's like, it's like Wizard of Oz, the house is moving, and it's crazy. And the witch is on the bike and everything's happening at once. And you're going, okay, hold on. And how do you take chaos and slow it down enough that we can even learn from any of those events? It's weird because I don't really see myself as that nice I don't feel like I'm nice. And I think you have to be nice to have the gift of mercy. So I, it just struck me as going, I don't think I'm nice. I feel like I'm an advocate.
Yes,
I feel like I have a place, especially for people who don't have a voice, and to stop and take those, because I'm not a recovering addict. I personally don't have trauma. I have situational depression, but some of it's just me being, I think I should be Cinderella and I'm not, and I'm like, what the heck? I'm depressed. I'm not Cinderella. So I can't, it's not even clinical that I can. So I sit, but I've been gifted to be in a family where every one of them have had those pieces. So I sit on the outside And I look in. In fact, I remember being in church, sitting in the back of church one time. And we had this young man, Down syndrome. And you know, I was actually Eric's age, probably close. And he was turned around in his seat with a hymnal facing the back of church, just singing his lungs out and kind of acting out. And I remember sitting there and being very angry at God and going, why can't my son's mental illness be that adorable?
Oh.
Why can't what he brings to the table be accepted in a church? Why is it that his anxiety doesn't look as easy to love? So because of that, I really try to just give perspective and turn the picture around and say, you know what? Have you ever thought about this? Have you ever thought how lonely it is and look around the room and go, there's people here that would never tell you what their kid's struggling with because you'll judge them.
Totally. Yeah.
And we all bring it to the table. There's so much shame around it. So I have those moments all the time. I remember driving to church, driving to my job, and I was so frustrated with my kids. So frustrated. And so I've grown up Reformed, Presbyterian, Christian Reformed Church. So I'll never say God spoke to me because, you know, in that denomination, he doesn't speak to us. So anyway, I did hear him impress upon my heart. Is that a
there you
way
go.
To say that?
There you go.
We call it a God Whatever. Download.
So God impressed upon my
yes.
heart. And, but I swear I heard a voice. And he said to me, Cindy, you'll settle for good kids. Mm. You'll just settle for them to act right. I'm trying to capture their heart. Let me have them. I have had so many moments like that where there are just, boom, you know, just pauses where they're not of me. They're not me thinking that. And those are the things that have just kind of moved me on a journey. And I don't know what that's about, but I feel like I've had that since I was young. And it's not like I always take up for the underdog, but I think I take up for the misunderstood.
Yeah.
I think there's a group of people that I go, that's not fair. You don't even understand what they're going through. I think that's probably my tribe that I take under my wing.
It's very empathetic, very compassionate, which I don't know that you have to be kind to have those two things just to affirm you. Not that you're not kind. You've always been kind to me. But I just wanted to affirm
well,
you.
Well, they used to say, oh, sweet Diane or sweet Barbara. And I'm like, they never put sweet Cindy. I've never heard anyone go, sweet Cindy.
But they would say so, empathetic, compassionate, strong
they would.
Cindy.
They
yes.
would. So I've just given up.
Well, and yet I hear what you're saying, but that was because at least at the time I was there, I wasn't at that church very long, but you were always an agent of change. You mediocre was never acceptable. Not listening wasn't an option. You know, you set the bar high and then you didn't take no for an answer. And that just speaks volumes. And I know what's going through my mind right now is God needs to somehow replicate what you did at that one church to all of the churches in the world. And I don't know, maybe you need to write a book. I don't know what this is going to look like, but just that idea of taking uncomfortable topics or loving people who are a little uncomfortable to love, you know, all of those things that you champion are just so valuable. And God's doing a work, like you said, with your kids, but he's doing it with everybody, you know. And Billy, my husband, Billy always says, you got to find where God's working and jump in, you know, and that's, you know, that's really, it just kind of, there's a wake of God working in Cindy Blum's life. And, you know, you just want to hang on because if you're on that boat, it's going to be bumpy, you know, at times. Anyway, I just, and I don't know if anyone ever said Sweet Diane either. Yeah, that, Barbara, yes, but I don't think I ever got that. But anyway, just what you're, you know, what you're doing just has to happen. And I hate for you that you're the one that's at least in Middle Tennessee, the voice of that, it seems, you know, you and Dan both. And even sometimes Chloe, I'm sure. I'm sure that's a title she doesn't want by any means. But, you know, when you share his artwork and when you share his life and all that, it's just is so powerful.
Well, when I go into places and speak, usually it's come and talk about what it's like, the grief and the loss. And, you know, and I tell them, I said, I will share our story of grief and loss. But first I'm going to share Eric's story of grief and loss. And then I use his art to say, this is the pain that he was going through. And, you know, and I'll say things like, you know, these are the Anne Lamott moments where I'm watching him kind of fade away and I'm going, guys, this is important. And I'll say, you know what, do you have any idea what it's like to go get your kid from his cremated remains? I mean, can we talk about that? And they're still just glazing over. And I go, you know what? No, you know what a 29-year-old son is like? He fits in a Publix bag. That day, I was going to pay the bill, and my son's remains were in a bookcase next to the binders with all of the accounts receivable receipts. And I'm thinking, how do you even do that? But you do that and you do it well. And then you go and a week before Eric died, I was driving with him and I put on the brakes and I put my arm in front of him and he's like, Mom, how long are you going to do this? I go, I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know what, that day I got his remains. I'm like putting them in the seat and I felt like I needed to buckle them up.
Yes.
Oh, it doesn't stop. I got to the stoplight. I put my hand in front of his remains. I'm like, forever.
Yeah.
We will do this forever. And that's what I want people to understand, is it's okay to want to do that forever.
Yeah.
And that's never going to go away. And that doesn't make me the saddest person in the world, because in 5 minutes, I will be laughing about something stupid. But it's important that we know, especially as Christians, and I'm really hard on Christians. I really am, because we've been given much, and we need to be able to understand that we can contain both things, both truths, hold joy and sorrow at the same time. Yeah. And, you know, what are all the stupid things that you should never say? You know, I'm like, there's a whole list, but actually it's just like, you know, I mean, it's just so important to just be there. Just be there. Don't feel like you can help them avoid the pain. Because who are we to say that? If someone said to me, well, you know, maybe you could have done this. And I'm going, so it's not God's will? I mean, did God know Eric's days are numbered? Did he know how long that dash was? You know, I mean, there's all of these big mystery questions. And I've got a lot of ideas about what I think heaven's like. And I'll tell people who want to correct me on that. I'm like, have you been there? And I'm like, you know, I go, then don't eat. You know, and I don't know, there'll probably be a sensory room. I'll be the first one that gets put in time out when I get into heaven. I don't doubt it. And I'm fine. Give me my think about it chair. I'll be in a corner. I'm pretty sure I know some other people that'll be there, because we just need to calm down. We're going to have way too many questions right through the gate. And there's going to be a sensory room where, you know, and I know those things are ridiculous, but they give me a sense of humor about something that's so hard.
Yeah.
And we've got to have permission to do that this side of heaven. Mm-hmm. We really do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, God knows. I think he just goes, wow, I can't wait till she gets out of that seventh grade grunge stage. And, you know, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up, Cindy? And he's like, I'm like, well, God, what am I when I grow up? And he goes, I don't know, something that makes you less crabby. Maybe, maybe that'd be a good idea. And I think he has a whole bigger sense of humor than we think he does.
Yeah. Oh, that's for sure.
He could not give us these dark things and not allow us to have a little bit of mystery and wonder about how in the world does this make sense?
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, so just on what you're saying, though, your book that you're going to write, that's probably addressed.
You've been telling me this. You've been telling me this for almost 7 years.
No. When are you going to start? It will never end. Do you know her? Wait.
I wrote a chapter in a book.
There you go. I brought you a red journal. Published? Didn't I?
Didn't I bring you
some kind of journal? But what I was going to say
is... You did, a big red one.
Yeah. What I was going to say, and I'm not really trying to push this, but yes, I am, is those chapters need to be... I'm thinking now. The chapters need to be titled... each one is something stupid that you've heard someone say, especially Christians. And then you just debunk that... Or you know what I'm saying? You flip it around to show, you know, how God can use it or God's glory in some way. Anyway, that's a...
I've shared all my good stuff on podcasts now, so nobody would need to buy the book.
Put that in a book.
Oh, no.
Put it in a book.
Yes. It's just crazy how, you know, there are so many families in so many churches who've been through something similar to this. Mm-hmm. And yet...
Or haven't yet.
Well, and that will. May be true. But you have done profound work with the journey that you were on with God. And just a lot of folks will, I probably shouldn't say that. A lot of folks will do things that feel very self-centered, right? Do things to help their own personal healing. And you, in the midst of all of your pain and grief, you reach out, and it's amazing.
It's really incredible.
Well, so let me ask you a question. We have information that you have given us, which is normal.
That sounds so ominous.
I know, sorry. But it's a project that you and Dan have lent your voice to, and it's a documentary called, at least for now it's titled, Shame on Us, which is a powerful title in and of itself. And it's being made by the 1028 organization, like a production company?
Yeah.
Okay.
Film production company.
And yeah. So if I'm correct, you and Dan have both been interviewed for this, right?
Dan and I have both been interviewed. And when they came to scope out, they said we're going to need a whole weekend. And so they came to just decide where they're going to be. They filmed me right in here. They filmed Dan. And my daughter, who did TV production in Fairview High School.
I remember that.
Yeah. So she was like, kind of lingering around, and she's never really bought into that whole thing. But it's funny because she's going, well, where are you gonna set this third camera, the second camera on that, and how are you gonna get that shot, how are you gonna do this? And all of a sudden they started talking to her, and she's in the documentary also.
Oh, good.
And wow. her parts are beautifully powerful. So when I talked to the director, I'm like, Chloe's like, I'm sure it's all on the cutting room floor. And he's like, I can't edit Chloe's stuff unless I know I've got a day after to recover.
Oh.
He said, because just the way that she brings and just the perspective, you know, so we're going to have a perspective of a lot of different voices, a lot of scientific people, a lot of people in recovery, a lot of people, two judges, former mayor Megan Berry is in it as a mom, and then our family, and we're tying in some of the guitar stuff with other artists. So we are, we're hoping that there'll be a small showing coming soon of just the rough cuts. We've got more money that has to be raised. I had no idea. I mean, you guys know. Huh. You guys know.
Really expensive.
I don't know why I didn't know this. But so in order to get it into post-production, they would like it to go to HBO or Netflix or something like that.
Yes.
Well, the distribution centers, they have to do certain things. We talked about closed captioning. Well, they have to close the caption in all different around the world kind of things. And so it costs money. So we're still fundraising, and it sounds like a ton of money, but to do it well and to get it into some of these, bigger than just some really a lot of people seeing it.
We need to get eyeballs on it.
We're looking at, we probably need another 80 grand. Now, there's one person out there that can literally just give that. I know that happens all day long. But I also know that, Dan and I have kind of challenged people and go, wow, I know that I don't do math very well, but if we've touched 8,000 people and they gave $10.
Yep. There you go.
Is that 80?
Yep.
Okay. So So if we touched 4,000 people and they gave 20,
yes.
Yeah.
We're there.
Right.
And I'm going, I think I have 4,000 people as Facebook followers. You know, wow. I mean, so that's the goal, is to just say, you know what, if you believe in this conversation, we're just asking everybody to just give a little. So this white guitar that's back here, uh-huh. We've donated that to 1028. We donated another guitar this summer to the Kickstarter. We're just trying to do kind of the stuff that we can do and hopefully, you know, hopefully just motivate other people to consider giving. Yeah. So,
well, we're going to, before we show a quick clip from it, I'd like for you to share where people can get involved or donate.
It's 1028film.com okay. is the website. Now, I may need to check my stats on that and make sure that that's correct. But it's on social media. It's at 1028 on Instagram and on Facebook.
Okay.
And they do updates. So follow them. Follow yeah. them and respond. And Skip is really cool because he gets people responding that really kind of have their hackles up and are not happy about the things that are being said. Because there's things we're talking about medically assisted treatment where we're talking about methadone, we're talking about Suboxone, we're talking about buprenorphine, we're talking about all of these different things. We're talking about Narcan. You know, there's a town, it was actually on the news since Eric's died. And it's a town in West Virginia where there were several deaths in one day. I mean, I'm trying to remember the number, but there were a lot of deaths in one day to overdose. Mm. And one guy was interviewed and he's like, yeah, good riddance. They needed to go.
Oh no.
And so another time when I talk about grief, I'm like, do you understand that that whole town, that man is grieving. He's angry. Ticked off, mad, probably got stolen from, probably got something really valuable stolen from, may have gotten a loved one killed from someone who was high or using an active addiction. I mean, there's so much grief all around the whole topic that we got to have these conversations, and they're not pleasant ones. They're things that you go, yeah, these are the things you don't talk about at Thanksgiving table, politics, religion, and probably the stigma around substance use disorder. I would say there's three topics. And there's more yes. now after the pandemic, this virus is its masks. I mean, we can add a whole bunch of stuff. But
yeah.
But those are things that are really hard to have conversations about. And this documentary is putting them all on the table. So when Skip puts things out or when his team puts things out, he's getting some responses and he's like, yeah, cool. Our algorithms.
That's right.
Helps our algorithms. I'm glad.
That's funny.
Like, okay, whatever, buddy.
Well, let's go ahead and show the quick rough edit clip that we have from your interview.
Okay.
He would have a 21-day stay and different things like that, where it was a probation violation. And every time we would set up a situation where he would be able to call. So as a mom and as a, you know, we would sit and go, okay. People would say, don't take those calls. And I'm like, well, you know what? So instantly, I'm put in a position where I have to defend how I'm choosing to care for a mentally ill, traumatized, addicted son. Because if he would have had cancer or busted two legs and he needed to call from the hospital, we'd be okay. But when it's mental illness and addiction, you don't get to support the same way. Most people don't even have the storyline to be able to have permission to say that. People that do have permission to say that, and I'm willing to listen to, my response is, hindsight now, I don't regret anything that we did. Because I can lay my head on my pillow and know that I fought for everything that it took to try to keep my kid alive. And I think that if your kid have cancer, you adjust the chemo. If the cancer comes back, you don't beat them up. You go, wow, you know what? We need a different chemo. Well, when Eric would relapse, it wasn't about beating him up. It was about looking at what the complexity of an aftercare plan looked like, what it needed to be at that moment. And things are so different now.
You already know this, but that's just so powerful and important, so important, such important information for people to know. And especially, like you said, the church, the people in the church need to be careful what they say, need to be, and it's not just that. It's not just a care of words, while it is that. It's a change of heart. Mm-hmm. It's a transformation of how we deal with tough situations.
Well, you know what I think? I think the scariest thing now is hope. The thing Eric was most afraid of was hope. I think in some ways, families and people who really don't understand things that they can't see and they can't control, it's the fear that if they hope for something to change and it doesn't, then what do you do with that? And where is God in that?
Yeah.
So it's that whole little mystery of what does that look like? And what does it look like in the here and the not yet? You know, I mean, we're this side of heaven, folks, this side of heaven.
Yeah.
And it takes a whole lot of faith and hope and understand that God's in the middle of the murky, unanswered questions.
Yeah. All right. So I know a little bit about this, but I'd like for you to expound on this for our listeners. You guys created then E.B. Rooster's Guitars, kind of as an outpouring of the grief, but in a way to practically like kind of give back. So can you tell us about that?
Well, Dan's been a luthier, a repair guy. We moved here in 91, and he's pretty much been repairing the whole time since he's been out of school and has always wanted to build. Well, in 2017, I mean, when Eric was working in the shop, which he was working off and on, but the last 6 months, he was really doing good work, doing luthery work in the shop. And he would tell you there was no way he was ever taking over the business because he knows there's no money to be had when you're making guitars or repairing them. So he was like, yeah, I'm going to do this for this long. But he was good at it. And they would dream about what they wanted to build. And then when he passed away, it was pretty hard to kind of figure that out. What we realized after Eric died is that we also had a lot of time on our hands. I mean, there are things that having someone who struggles with substance use disorder in your family and struggles with mental illness, that there were things that it consumed kind of our time, our heart, our energy, our reserves. Not even that we were doing so much, but that we had our reserves were so depleted from, I don't know, hand-wringing, worrying, all the stuff that I was probably doing that I didn't trust God enough for, whatever. But we realized that we could spend some of our time. And now that COVID's been in play, I always say we could use our COVID minutes in the day in ways, yes. Because seems like it's more like a 36-hour day than a 24-hour day,
yes,
since COVID. So we just started designing and building and figuring some things out. The first thing we did is we went to this supplier and started dreaming, and they were already roughing out some of the guitar necks. And the first ones that we made in November of 2017, the necks that were set aside were like a customer would have ordered the rough cut to be a wider at the nut and a wider back profile or different kinds of frets or different position markers on the face of the guitar. And they were like the rejects. So our first round of guitars were rehabs. We took them off the cast off pile and we turned them into something that we hoped people would want.
Oh my gosh.
So that was awesome. Our first kind of launch. And then Luthier husband got into play and he's like, yeah, I want to kind of have the kind of neck I want. Okay. So we're not doing rehab guitars anymore. We're doing the guitars that Dan wants, you know, that he thinks people are going to want. So we were looking to go, you know what, if we did a guitar a month, that'd be fun. Well, so what's that? November, that's 36 guitars, maybe, you know, 40. Well, we're at number 77.
Wow.
So we've been before COVID, we were selling about one a week. Since COVID, our retail has pretty much shut down and we don't really have access to that, but we still do some custom stuff. And what we do is we give 10% of the retail away. So we don't, our margins are horrible. Like business people would come in and go, what are you doing? And we're like, you know what? We're not saving the world, but we had a guitar hanging in Carter's shop and a young gal came in, and I'll make this story quick. She came in and walked in and she had just been violently sexually assaulted 10 days prior. This was her first outing with a friend. Walked down Carter Vintage to the ramp, saw the guitars hanging there and pictured the one of them that we had done. And she couldn't get her mind off of it, but it was literally her first outing after a huge traumatic event. She took the guitar down and started playing it. And her friend came by and he's like, you don't ever play a guitar in public. And she's like, I know something's speaking to me.
Oh, man.
This guitar. And she kept playing it. She goes, I don't know what it is, but this guitar, there's something about it. Well, he took the hang tag and showed it to her. And he's like, did you read this? And she's like, no, I didn't look at that at all. And it says, our mission is Guitars That Care. We give money back to help people with mental illness, trauma, and substance use disorder. And she's like, something about it. So I don't know what that is. But I just know that maybe people can kind of connect with the journey and connect with what we're doing. We're giving some money away, but we're not saving the world. And like I said before, I hope people can borrow our story. I hope people can go, hey, these people are doing this. I hope it helps with the stigma. I mean, they're great guitars. Dan is an amazing luthier. And
he is.
As the business person of it, I'm like, we're not making 10 cents on this. He's like, I don't care. It's not going out the door unless it's blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, whatever. So we just literally just make them and try to get our costs kind of out of them. And then we give money away, or we'll, like I said, the one hanging back here, every once in a while, we'll just give a whole guitar away.
Wow.
And it really is that we want to take something that was so tragic and not only make beautiful guitars, but encourage people to make beauty beyond that, write their story, to write their pain, to do whatever. And that's kind of what Dan knows how to do. It's what I know how to do. And it's just kind of happening and it's nice. It's fun. We hope to expand to acoustics and we're probably going to do some dulcimers, probably some cigar box guitars and some things that may be a little, just some fun. We really want to have a little more fun with it.
Yeah. So. Well, I know you said that you're not out there saving the world, but you got to know that God is using this and he is blessing other people that girl is one example, I'm sure, of the people whose lives you've touched that you won't hear stories about. You know what I'm saying? So, God is so blessing that, and I'm so encouraged by that. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, it's fun. We get to also then these T-shirts are kind of obnoxious because they're like this great big head. Let me get up there and see if you can see it. And Dan's like, oh, we got to change our logo, or we maybe should do this. And I'm like, but you know what? You can pick these out of the crowd. I was looking at a video the other day, and all of a sudden there's this guy with this, I could see the EB Rooster decal on the headstock. I'm like, Dan, he's playing your guitar. We have no idea who they are because, they bought them and we don't know who they are.
Yeah.
So anyway.
That's is so funny. Cool.
Well, Billy bought, Billy and I both bought them, but Billy always wears his to events where we go where there's guitar players. So he's trying to rep it for you guys. Yeah.
Well, I do want to say one thing because I think that I want people who are dealing with it now, with what we were dealing with, to know that things are changing. I mean, the resources and when I talked about that city in West Virginia, that there were this many overdoses, that meant those overdoses were deaths. That's right. What it was like. When I read in the paper after Eric died, you know, 14 overdoses, I'm like, they all died. Well, now that's not true, because there's Narcan. They're not all dying. Many of them can get a second chance. Eric didn't have health insurance. Like it or not, the Affordable Health Care Act has given people the ability to get some help. He didn't have access to that. There are so many different things. There's sciences that are changing. There's so many different things. I believe the resources are there. I want us to make sure we hold our legislators accountable for how they are spending those resources. You guys have a nonprofit. You know that you got to stay on every dime in order to make that really bring change,
yeah.
Be an agent of change. And if we don't value what's behind, that's why I'm trying, we do the stigma document, because we want to put a high value on life, a real high value on life. And that way, everything else that comes with it means that we'll be putting a high value on every dollar that's put towards any kind of state getting opioid funding from Purdue Pharma or from whatever, because there's money there.
Yeah.
We just have to make sure that it's getting allocated. That's what I want people to know mostly. It is changing. I mean, when Eric died, it was 129 a day. That's how many were dying. This past year, 2019, it's 185.
Oh, my word.
The number's not going down.
Nope.
So it's real. And people's lives are forever changed by, you know, overdose death.
Yeah.
And it's sad. Because it's really something that we could do better at. I mean, we could be bringing that number down. We're never going to kick it and solve it permanently, but it doesn't need to increase.
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, this is
important.
It's important, but it's just a tough conversation. And we are so grateful mm-hmm. to you for your time, for sharing your story, and even just what you just said, giving hope to those families who are finding themselves, you know, in the midst of this crisis and pain, hopefully before death occurs, and that they can get help, you know?
Yeah.
So I would just want to make sure that you've said what you need to. I mean, this has been powerful.
Very.
Well, I feel like it's a little sip out of a fire hydrant, but yeah. Hopefully.
Sure. I believe that.
Yes. Don't we need that sometimes? You know, it's just really interesting. Something that you said, and I guess I just want to say this in hopes of it being encouraging. We had another guest who talked about this idea of pausing. And you said it a couple of times. Mm-hmm. You know, and the situation that they were talking about is, you know, very different. But maybe that's... You know, pivot was the word for 2020, but maybe pause is the word for 2021. Maybe we need to be pausing in everything, in whether it's in a relationship or decisions or reactions. Because what you said in the context that you said, it was, you know, obviously just life-giving. You know, that idea of helping someone pause as they're in this overwhelming crisis where they feel like they probably don't want to live, and you're giving them that hope. So I don't know. That's just something that resonated with me. So
yeah, absolutely.
Well, all right. Thank you so much. We are.
Yes, it was good.
Forever.
You guys are doing good work.
Indebted to you. So
yeah, I'm a little speechless about this conversation. I think it's just so incredibly, you know, you were talking about pausing. I think that for me, I need to pause and just listen. I know this story, but I don't know this story. And so I just am so grateful to you for talking to us, for being so brave about it, for being so compassionate kind. I know is a silly word we were talking about early, but kind and very generous I think that's a word I would use to describe you after this, is just, you're just very, very generous in a lot of ways. And we are so grateful to be on the receiving end of that today. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, I want you guys to know that when you spent the one of the podcasts talking about the work of Sway, I actually think that's one of the more powerful ones you've done.
Oh, of all failure.
All the guests, I think the two of you probably brought as much of a powerful story in that setting than anything, because being authentic and honest about what it was like to put that together. And Sarah, you know, you being honest about how difficult it was and what, you know, what recovering after that season and what it was like to, you know, I mean, you even talked about the friendships and betrayal and those kinds of things. And that's the, those are the important conversations. So I wouldn't, I don't know if you guys would put yourselves in top five of those 15, but you need to.
Yeah,
no, you're right. We wouldn't. Well,
but you really need to.
I appreciate that.
It sets the tone. It really sets the tone the rest of your guests.
And I appreciate that. And I feel like I was thinking about this earlier today, discipleship, true discipleship and growth. These tough conversations have to happen. The conversations where we're talking about our pain and a different type of grief, but a grief nonetheless, and an angry struggle with God. I mean, you're never going to disciple someone by telling them how wonderful being a Christ follower is. I mean, it is wonderful, but it's so hard, and it's very difficult. And so having these kinds of uncomfortable conversations, and the hopefully more uncomfortable conversations we'll have about our journey and with other people in their journey, I mean, that's where discipleship happens, I think. And anyway, that was really nice of you to say. And
well, the Saturday after I lost my job, Eric sat in my, I was just sitting in a chair. It was hard. I mean, it was a hard day. It felt like a lot of betrayal and there's always complexities around all of that stuff. But he sat and encouraged me so much about how God was using me and how he has used me on a church staff and how he's going to continue to use me and how not to give up just because a budget and a few people said that your role was no longer important. And I was like, you know what? That was straight from heaven.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it was just not very many weeks later, you've gone.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
So
life is crazy.
There's those times you guys are having conversations that, you know, that are just, I'm going to get a tattoo and it's going to be in Dutch letters. It's going to say Ogenblik. And it means in the blink of an eye. Mm. And I'm thinking, you know what? I want to remember that in the blink of an eye. And I want to live like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, amen. Yep.
Well, again, we are so grateful and we love you and we love your family. And we are so blessed by all of the things that you guys are doing and your story and you sharing it. So thank you very much for sharing it with us today.
Give my best to Bo.
We will.
All right. And Billy.
Well, yeah.
And Jesse. Jesse doesn't even know me. He was so little.
Jesse's in his own world.
Well, and give our best to Dan and Chloe,
yes,
too.
Yes. I will.
All right.
Okay.
We love you. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
For more information on Project Brickworks and how you can get involved, text BRICK to 55498 or visit us online at projectbrickworks.org. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Twitter, like our Facebook page, and if you're watching this on YouTube, make sure to hit the subscribe button, give us a like, and turn on notifications. If you're listening to this on a podcast, please subscribe and be encouraging with your rating. We love you all, be blessed, and we'll see you next time.